Unscreened open lines tonight. Naked lines. Yes, they are. And I think that we have left Lori, first-time caller in Live Oak, California, on hold for maybe just a little bit too long. Lori, are you there? And if you are, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, John. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I want you to know that I listen all the time. And I thought it was appropriate to step outside while I talk to you.
Okay.
And I'm outside, and I can see all the stars very clearly because I am in Northern California.
Beautiful.
And I'm not around any, you know, city or lights. So there's a lot of stars.
That's real country dark out there, isn't it?
Yes. And you know what? It made me just realize that I didn't really want to call and talk about what I originally called about because I was going to call and complain about something. Oh, you know, some bureaucratic thing that's going on. But when you come outside and you stand under the stars and you get back to nature, you kind of forget about all that.
Isn't it the truth? I remember going on a camp out with, a camp out. And I was bunked in the bed of my pickup truck, big old F-250 thing with a gigantic gas-sucking engine. And it was real country dark. And I saw this unbelievable myriad of stars, and I just thought, I'm missing it. I'm just missing it, being in the city. You can't see any of this. It's just extraordinary.
That's why I live out here.
You know, you could complain and still be mellow if you wanted to.
No, I don't want to complain.
Okay.
But I just want to say that I don't really know what I want to say anymore. You know, it just changed me when I came out here. And maybe that's all what we all need is a little bit of getting back to nature, do you think?
You know, maybe the whole purpose of your call tonight was just to walk outside so you could disconnect from what would otherwise be a little issue that you wanted to take over something. It's, you know, in the end, it's really not that important. That expression, don't sweat the little stuff, and it's all little stuff. I think that's true. I mean, I'd like to think that anyway. You got to take a break from the chaos every once in a while. Otherwise, it'll eat you up. There's too much stuff to worry about, and much of it is beyond our control. But I do urge people to take control of what you can, starting with yourself.
And no, just let it. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. You're a musician.
I am a musician, and I think that music really helps people a lot.
Soothes the savage breast, it does.
Yes, I think it can put you in a really good mood. It can put you to sleep. It can take you back to a past great moment in your life.
It's interesting, the power of music. It's interesting, mm-hmm. The power of music. I don't like to listen to music during the day that has lyrics in it, because I'll get into it and it'll start messing with my mood a little bit. So I'll stick with classical, or maybe I'll go to the chill channel and listen to some mellow electronica.
Mm-hmm. Smooth jazz.
Yeah, smooth jazz. I remember taking a flight. It's a big deal to me because, you know, there ain't no place to pull over up there. A flight, a single engine, single pilot, with me in the left seat going to L.A., and I landed at Winslow, Arizona. And it was kind of set up and had more Mexican food. I'd already had some in New Mexico and then in Texas before that. So I'm going to have some Arizona Mexican food this time. It was good. And it was like landing in the 1940s. And in fact, they even had 40s music playing over a really good sound system. So I just had to take an hour and sit and just bask and listen to that. Look at that beautiful red dirt and strangest colors in Arizona. They're just excellent. And listen to that music, and then because the density altitude was so high and I was so heavily loaded, my aircraft was doing flying saucer stuff as I left the field with a density altitude of 7,200 feet. It was just already thought it was way up there, and it wasn't. So anyway, it was quite exciting, quite 40s-esque. Delighted to have had you call in, and I'm glad that you were in a mellow state of California in the north and also in a mellow state of mind. So have a good evening. Rightio then, R.D., East Tennessee. Are ye there?
What's going on, John?
You are, man. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'll tell you what. I want to compliment you. Other than George Knorr, you are the finest host has ever had.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm sure there are some who would disagree, but I'll take it.
Well, I got a couple of little things here. I'm not going to take a lot of your time, but I first want to start out with the NDAA. I want you to know that we have 81 traitors in our Senate.
Only 81?
The ones that, of course, signed for the NDAA. We have 14 patriots. We have one senator who was deceased and three that just didn't even bother to take a vote on anything. So that tells you about that. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if they try and take our Second Amendment away, all these legislators, the Congress, the Senate, the judiciary, Obama, all this cabinet, are responsible for every single drop of blood that gets spilled in this country because of them trying to take away our Second Amendment and our Constitution.
Well, you know, man, that is such a hot button issue, and everybody's just been beaten to death with it, you know. But,
I've been listening to this for a while, and
I know, me too.
And, you know, it's killing me. I mean, I'm 61 years old. Back in the 50s and 60s, and that when I was growing up, we didn't have to lock our doors. We didn't have to lock our car doors. We knew every neighbor we had. We helped each other. John, what's it come to now?
Well, you know, there's a fine line between letting the law enforcement, the peace officers, I like to think of them as, rather than law enforcement. That sounds a little hard.
Yeah.
You know, the cops were pretty rough. Back when we were kids, if the cops came to your house, there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
There was a problem. You were disgraced. I mean, if you were, the fact of the matter is in the late 50s, all the way up really to the probably 63, 64, I'm thinking 63 was pretty much the cutoff point. A divorced man was a prostitute chaser, and a divorced woman was just, you know, they had a variety of names for her. They just looked at her as promiscuous and him as a failure. Now, is this fair or not? I don't know. What's fair about life in some ways? You know, some make it into their 90s, some make it into their teens. Some don't make it to their teens. I mean, it's just how it is. You can't predict that. You can't protect yourself against, you can't second guess what's going to happen to you in your life, right?
Exactly. And I mean, the thing of it is, you know, people say, you know, matter of fact, a couple callers before said, well, what about God, okay? God gave us free will, okay? So we have chosen our path. God doesn't dictate what we're going to do. And as a matter of fact, that'll probably be my closing thing. I think what everybody should do, the next break you have, every person listening to this show should take and honestly talk to God, pray for his guidance, pray that it'll help our country, pray that it'll help our supposed politicians care for our country a whole lot more than they do and care for him, and then we get God back in the schools and into our government buildings and into even some of our churches. We're so worried about their 501c tax exempt thing that, you know, they do anything the government tells them to.
We've been pulled into directions that we just didn't want to go, my brother. I really appreciate your call very much. We will continue with Friday Night Naked Lines when we come back in just a minute here on Coast to Coast AM. John B. in for George Norrie. He'll be back on Monday after a few days off celebrating his 10th year at the helm. That's extraordinary. I can imagine how, you know, the depth of his memory. I mean, I've just been here slightly over a year, and he's been doing it 10, a decade. It's amazing. I just got a little email here. I want to share it with you. You know what we haven't talked about? We have not talked about this except, is it the SSRIs? Is that what they are? The ones that John Noveski wrote about, posted a thing, and then something bad happened to him, as in he died, in relation to some of these people running around shooting. Now, let me try and put this. Maybe I'm being a lawyer here. Maybe I could have been a liar. Not a lawyer, but a liar. Got this email, and this is what it says. It's from Brandon. He says, he writes, I think the fall of social order is the result of complete destruction of moral values. One can blame everything on the brainwashed social media. One no longer cares about the fellow man and cares more about your cigarette burning 5 feet away. No religion, no values. The world we live in does not provoke free speech. I think he means promote free speech or free thought. And he says, kudos. He said, I'll listen to you when I can. Disagree on your thoughts about marijuana. Temporarily relieves depression, promotes free speech. Well, that's true. Some, you know, every once in a while you get around a hippie that just can't shut up. But it also caters to a useless part of the populace. Let's talk about that for just a second, seriously. Now, let's start with something official, and I'll get to the pot in a minute. You know, I'm always picking on Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Now, he's a genius billionaire guy. He is a top echelon businessman. I admit that. So's Al Gore. He started off with, I heard the figure was $6 million. He's got $300 million now. Now, if that's not good money management, I don't know what is. But get this. Yesterday, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and city officials unveiled a new initiative to limit supplies of prescription painkillers in the city's emergency rooms as a way to combat what they described as a growing addiction problem in the region. Some critics, as documented by the New York Times, however, felt the move would unnecessarily hurt poor and uninsured patients who use emergency rooms as their primary care doctor. Needless to say, Mr. Bloomberg was not swayed by this line of argument. Here's his quote. The city hospitals we control, so we're going to do it, and we're urging all of the other hospitals to do it. Voluntary guidelines. Somebody said, then maybe there won't be enough painkillers for the poor who use the emergency rooms as their primary care doctor, the mayor said on his weekly radio show with a fellow named John Gambling. Number one, there's no evidence that. Number two, wait a minute. Number one, there's no evidence of that. Number two, supposing it is really true, and this is the important part. So you didn't get enough painkillers, and you did have to suffer a little bit. The other side of the coin is people are dying, and there's nothing perfect. There's nothing that you can possibly do where somebody isn't going to suffer. And it's always the same group. Everybody is heartless. Come on, this is a very big problem. I wonder sometimes if these people keep up with the, I have trouble with it. I can imagine how Mayor Bloomberg must feel keeping up with the words that are actually coming out of his mouth. There's nothing that you can possibly do where somebody isn't going to suffer. That's a good one, Mr. Mayor. It really is. Now, query people, my friends, few enemies. If you wanted to take the drug cartel business away from them, I wonder how you would do it. I know. Quit buying their drugs. Actually, Calderon makes a point. The rest of it was lame, but he did make the point that, hey, it's your demand that's fueling this. Well, that's true. So now we have some marijuana is legal in some states. These states are going to have problems with the feds over this. Now, let's just say we went, okay, you know what? We're going to send these guys a message. Nothing that isn't grown right here. So let's say the states did make it legal. You could grow four or five plants in your backyard for your own use, but you can't sell it because now you've crossed the line. Well, there's no need to sell it because you can grow it yourself in your own backyard, and who cares? Let's say the people were responsible enough to just have a puff of it when you're home. Don't be, you know, like stoned on the street driving around. Chances are you'll drive too slow and impede traffic. You know? Now this pot smoking thing goes way back to when they found that it grew here. Even the Three Stooges, Curly, is saying an okie doke, a party smoke. A party smoke? Well, gee, I wonder what he was talking about. Well, we know what he was talking about. That's why our parents didn't want us to watch him. One of the reasons. My dear departed mother was a nightclub singer back in the World War II days. And she said some of the musicians were always smoking that stuff, and some guys didn't. And they played right alongside each other, and it was fine. It's okay for musicians. Now, the ones who didn't smoke it would kind of be like, yeah, he smokes that stuff. But the suggestion was, I don't know why he doesn't, you know, but he plays great, so we don't really care. Now, why anybody would get into the cocaine, the toot, the blow, the nose candy, the Peruvian marching powder, I don't know why anybody would do that, given its reputation for destroying bank accounts, thinking processes, job security, and everything else. people are still voluntarily, well, you know, I know what the reputation for heroin is, but I'll chance it. Go ahead, give me some. I mean, this is just plain stupidity. Going back to Bloomberg, there's nothing that you can possibly do where somebody isn't going to suffer. If all of a sudden we just went, okay, that's it. Nobody's going to do anything. And we decided to do this because you can't enforce it. People have been smoking that stuff, legal or not legal. They've been doing it. Excessive use of anything is going to hold you back. But I go back to the, some people still voluntarily will say, I'll have some heroin just to try it. I can handle it. I'll be the one that it doesn't get its hooks into. If you put the cartels out of business, how many police and enforcement officials do you put out of business also? A multi-hundred-billion-dollar apparatus, law enforcement apparatus, and all that cash coming in to great big old banks. It was all over the news. HSBC paid a couple of hundred million, something. They paid a big fine, said they were sorry. And Eric Holder's Justice Department said, we're not going to prosecute them. They're too big to bring down. You see, the corruption just goes everywhere, which is why many people go back to their scriptures and they say, well, it says right here that the bad guy, Satan, runs the earth. Can you look at, well, pretty strong case could be made for it. You can't trust anybody unless you know them and there is a mutual love there, which is, of course, what this is all about, love and the absence of it, love of our fellow man and our fellow woman. Not extend our neighbors a helping hand, extend them two helping hands, and then help ourselves to our neighbors. That's not the way it's supposed to go. So anyway, just saying, we make these decisions. The people that we put in places of leadership will try to make them for us. We must make our wishes known. Or we'll follow wherever they lead, and then we may wind up with that proverbial statement. It's become proverbial on this program when I'm sitting in the captain's chair. Where are we going, and what are we doing in this handbasket? Oh no. All right. Let's get a caller on here right quick, shall we? Lou in Long Island, New York. How are you, Lou? Didn't mean to go on that long and leave you on hold, but...
Oh. I was going to comment about Lori, but I've changed my mind. I've wondered what's happened to the children of this country. You know, growing up in the 60s and the 70s, I was a skinny kid. I got bullied. I got pushed down in the playground. Brown hair, you know, glasses, orthopedic shoes, things like that. And my father was a hunter, and I always knew where his three rifles were in the closet. But never once in my mind did it ever occur to me to take it out on those bullies and grab a rifle. I just don't understand in the last 10, 20 years how our children have gone so wrong.
Well, you know, Gunnery Sergeant Hartman in that movie Full Metal Jacket was screaming at Private Pyle one time and said, yeah, what's the problem with you, Pyle? Did mommy and daddy not give you enough attention where you were a child? What do you think the possibility is that mommy and daddy, where present, have paid some of these people a little bit too much attention and have just spoiled them into weenie-dom, where when they object to something bad enough, they reach for a deadly weapon rather than just, you know, go over and mix it up a little bit, maybe do a little pushing and shoving and let it go at that?
Yeah,
now they go for the
spoiled
gun.
I wasn't spoiled. I came home with scuffed pants, and my dad said, what happened? And I said, I got pushed over to the playground. And he said, well, go back and push the other guy over. You know, the worst was fisticuffs. I mean, it never even entered my mind to grab my father's rifles. Now it seems to be the norm.
Would you feel like hanging around a little bit so we can talk a couple of minutes more on the other side of this break? It's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 minutes or something. Would you mind hanging on, Lou?
I most certainly would.
Well, you just hang tough, and we'll do this break, and we'll be right back with our naked, not naked callers, naked lines on Coast to Coast AM. Wells in for George Norrie. All right, is Lou still on the line? Because I want to talk to Lou. I don't want too much more time to go by without finishing up our conversation, because I want to ask him about an observation or two that he might have had. Lou, you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, excellent. Let me ask you something. You were a kid in the 50s, right? I'm not gonna ask you how old you are. I'm just saying you were.
I'm 56.
All right, then you must have some opinions about this. You remember when one murder, like that lunatic Richard Speck that killed those, I think it was 9 nurses or something, when it just like horrified to the point where people were throwing up practically the whole country. Why, how can you account for this unbelievable increase in violence? I mean, do you think it's been induced by the media? Do you think it's a, I could throw a lot of stuff out there, but if I do, it'll make it sound like that's what I think. I do think it's the media. I do think it's violent video games. I don't think it's the, I don't think that these things are going to have the same effect on everybody. And some people, it's going to, you know, it's going to flip them out and make them do things. What do you think?
When I was growing up, we didn't have the violent video games as Men of War that we have now. The most violent was Tom and Jerry cartoon.
It was harmless.
I think it's a breakdown in the family structure where you have latchkey kids and they don't have supervision. When I grew up, of course, I had a stay-at-home mom, and it was structure. There was no really downtime. You had chores. You had to do things. And I just don't think that's going on now. I think that the freedom, you know, everybody says let the kids do their own thing. However, they have to be structured so they grow into a responsible person. If there's no structure there anymore, they don't grow into a good citizen, and they just go awry.
I wonder if they even give marks for citizenship anymore.
That's long gone.
That's long gone. Okay, no flag in the classroom, et cetera, et cetera. Just...
Well, when I grew up, we saluted the flag every day.
Yep. Hands over your heart. Let's say the pledge.
Yeah, it's a very sad fact that that was taken out of the classroom because it gives you a sense of pride of your country and everything that you have because of this country.
Well, you know, it gives you a sense of unity, too. You're part of something.
Yes. Yes, you're not alone. You're part of something. And what your parents work, my father worked 2 jobs. What they do for their children to give them a better life, to make them move forward and do better than they did, I just don't see it anymore. I just don't see that structure anymore. And
I don't want to make you worse, and I don't want to raise your blood pressure, but.
But
you know, what passes for entertainment now is absolutely extraordinary. Now, we got this, I don't know if you've heard about this one, but I was like, are you serious? This is, and I saw some people laughing. They just thought it was a scream. It's this rapper guy who has 11 children from 10 wives. He does not remember their names.
Yes.
He can't run them all down, but he makes the point that, well, I'm taking care of 11 kids. Some people can't even take care of one kid. Everybody goes, well, you know, he's really right about that. It's like, I think we better hope nothing happens to him because there are going to be a lot of kids on their own with us in a single mom household unless she does something.
And so, and it's presented as the norm, as abnormal.
Isn't that strange?
We should see as this is just normal. It's not normal. It's the degradation of society.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Listen, I appreciate your call very much. It's good to have you on the program, and thanks for taking the time, and thanks for waiting over the break. Okay, that was Lou. I gotta reload something to you here. I don't think my friend Glenn in Quebec will mind. He says, "Xiao John, as an octogenarian, meaning he's in his 80s, I can tell you that when it comes to weather, nothing I've witnessed / observed during my lifetime has changed. Extreme weather is occurring now, has always occurred, and will continue occurring. One thing that has changed during my lifetime is the rapid acceleration and extremely successful indoctrination / brainwashing of the human cerebrum by charlatans. We are truly living in the age of charlatans." And then he admonishes me to continue with my shtick. I didn't know that was a Canadian expression. More naked, unscreened, open lines with you when we come back. Let's take a little quick floating break on Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to the little party. our Friday night open line shindig, as it were. Wild card line number 3, Rhonda in Pueblo, Colorado. Are you there?
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Wells.
Good evening. Thanks for waiting so long.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to speak with you. I'm calling because I want to tell you, express what's on my mind.
Okay.
I have a couple comments and one question of you, if you may.
First, I'm ready. Hit me.
I'm calling you from the land of legal marijuana.
Yep.
I work in the MMJ, the medical marijuana industry, as an accountant. I'm a transplant here. I'm a native from the burbs of Chicago. I've lived here for about 13 years. And, well, first and foremost, I would like to thank you, Mr. Wells, for producing such quality broadcasts.
Thank you very much. I have help.
Yes.
Help and lots of it.
It's wonderful. It really is. I've been listening to Coast to Coast for about 6 months. I was very drawn to Mr. Norrie's such a loving and compassionate aura of his voice.
Yes.
It's deep and joyous sounding. But then as I listened to the broadcast, I kind of became a little concerned. I am watching what's going on in the world, how it's changing for us, and then listening to all your different programs about everything under the sun and above the sun. I came to know, what am I supposed to do as a single mother to be prepared for whatever it is that's coming, because obviously something is. What does one do to be the best prepared? And how do you do it?
You know, to give you the most, irrespective of a person's financial position or what they're physically capable of doing, I mean, there are many, many factors that can affect that answer. But I would say this. When it comes to times of crisis, some of the most well-prepared will not be the ones who survive the crisis. Some of the ones who are absolutely the poorest prepared and were the least expecting of a crisis will survive. So in the broad strokes, I would say the important thing to do is put your cleats on and your uniform and get on out there on the ball field and do what you can. We know that our primitive needs need to be satisfied. I don't think it's a bad idea to just have enough food for a couple of weeks. It doesn't have to be expensive food, and it can be accumulated over time. Canned soups, bulk rice. Again, you're going to have sugar. You're going to have flour. I understand some of this stuff will get weevils in it, depending on temperature and humidity and so forth, but it can be sealed, and it's usable for a long time. You've got to be able to... Nutrition is going to be number one. Nutrition is number one. And then after that, concealability, absent mobility. In other words, if you can't leave the scene of the crisis, whatever form the crisis takes, then keep a very low profile if you can't get away from it, and be prepared to, and discreetly if necessary, if there are food shortages, for example. Well, you don't want to be the one that's got the smell of burning steak coming from your grill wafting all over the neighborhood. That's not smart. It's going to attract hungry people. As nutrition levels in people drop, they get real cranky. They really do. Every standing superior fighting force on earth, and we say fighting force. Why fighting force? Why does it have to be that? Because they're under the most stress. Nutrition is absolutely number one. Without it, you can't think straight. Your body suffers, all of it. So food, water, and the ability to either leave the scene of the crisis or conceal yourselves for as long as necessary, perhaps as long as 30 days. And in the meantime, don't worry about it. Let your motto be, do all you can, as well as you can, for as long as you can. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I hope that I hope that helped something. And listen, I'm delighted that you called. Thank you for your very kind compliments, and thanks for listening to Coast AM. All right, very good. All right, then now, how about Jeff? Jeff, Wild Forest, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call and relay a personal experience I had the other day when I walked into Walmart and went to buy something, and the machine at the self-checkout kiosk does not accept cash.
Oh, great.
Yeah, this was in Lincoln, Nebraska, and it was the first time I had ever seen such a thing. And the conspiracy theorists who have predicted a one-world currency that will be totally digital with no cash, they were right. It's not coming. It's here. And the first Walmart I've ever seen it in, I'm a trucker, so I hit them all over, was in Lincoln, Nebraska, and it was about 2 a.m., and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I asked the one employee who watches over the kiosk, so I said, does this machine really not take cash? And she says, yeah, and the ones that do take cash are down tonight, so if you want to, you'll have to. And I said, no, thank you, and walked out. Either as a little protest or as a shock to the senses, realizing what I'm witnessing. And it's no coincidence that the ones that do take cash weren't working. This is a pilot program to introduce the cashless society, and the ones that aren't working was intentional, so we would be forced to use the machines that don't use cash. They're not going to take these back and say, well, the public didn't take to them, so we're going to put the machines back in that do accept cash. They're only going to bring these out further. They're not taking them back. Just like if they take us our guns, they're not giving them back. As they're rolling out these cashless kiosks, they're not going to take them back. They're only going to implement more. So,
Jeff, I think you're absolutely right. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Say that. What'd you say?
You'll see it soon at a Walmart near you. And one other thing I want to just kind of mention along with this is the SDR. It's an electronic currency basket that consists of the American dollar, the euro, the yen, and the British pound. And what I understand a currency basket to be is where you mix your currencies electronic or mathematically. As I understand, my rudimentary understanding is, say, a dollar has a dollar worth of purchasing power and a peso has, say, 10 cents. There's 10 pesos to a dollar. Okay. And we each put $100 in, I put $100 in, you put 100 pesos in, we mix them all up, and we take out this new form of currency that's worth a half a dollar and a half a peso. So it would have 55 cents worth of purchasing power, a half a dollar and a half a peso. If a peso is 10 cents and half a peso is 5 cents. And the guy that put in 100 pesos and got out 100 of these new currencies out of the currency basket, put in a currency that has 10 cents worth of purchasing power and got out a currency that has 55 cents worth of purchasing power, he won. The guy that put in a dollar and got back one of these 55 cent purchasing power currencies, he kind of lost out. But in the end, you throw all the currencies together and you pull out something that is a mixture. And right now, the SDR, Strategic Drawing Rights, which is what the IMF uses, is a mixture of the euro, the pound, the dollar, and the yen.
Where can I go for more information on this?
SDR. You Google it, SDR.
How about just Google it? That'll work.
Yep, just Google it.
How did you come to know this?
Alex Jones mentioned the SDR, that pretty soon people like Starbucks is going to say, we don't take dollars, we only take SDR, and you can use your iPhone to purchase a coffee, but sorry, we don't take dollars anymore, it's too trendy. These SDRs are what's the cool happening thing. Right now, individuals don't use them, only companies use them to trade their assets. But I think it's going to expand, and something like this currency basket, electronic currency, is going to be what we're all using. And RFID chip will be what you use to electronically purchase things. You know, like that one lady was saying, the mark of the beast, the currency is coming that's going to be the phoenix. Well, it may or may not be the phoenix, but the electronic currency is here. And when Walmart is rolling out kiosks that do not accept cash, it won't be long.
Let me tell you what, man, you are spot on with this stuff, but you know,
one other thing before I roll.
Oh, okay.
It's the IAT. It's like you were saying, the precogs that will detect crime before it happens.
Yep.
There's a test called the implicit association test, IAT, and anyone can go to harvard.edu and take one of their IATs. Implicit association test gives you two categories and shows you an image, and you place the image in either A or B. And what they're doing is testing how long it takes you, and they measure it in microseconds to see the delay, not necessarily which category you put it in, but your delay in how long you place the item or the word that you're shown or that you hear or the image you're shown into one of the categories.
And this determines premeditation, I suppose?
It actually extracts your subconscious prejudices, preferences, belief systems, and biases. And here's how you know. The race-based IAT is their most prevalent and infamous one. And like 60 or 80% of African Americans who take this test show biases where they associate positive things with white people and negative things with black people. And it's because of the social conditioning that they've been subjected to in our culture. Now, if you take this, no matter how much you say, I don't associate Muslims with terrorists, and I don't think Islam is a violent religion, as if you've been living in America for the last 10 years, you associate a turban with a terrorist. And when they show you these different categories and they give you an image to place it in A or B, it will take you a half second longer to place it in that category. These African Americans would not consciously believe that they are prejudiced and preferential toward white people and prejudiced against black people. They're not self-hating people, but they have these subconsciously ingrained and indoctrinated biases from our culture. So they will be able to extract anti-Americanism, if you're a prepper and paranoid, it extracts your, and here's the thing, no matter how many times you take the test, you cannot change your score.
Is that right?
He took it over and over every day because he came out biased against black people and he felt guilty about this. Finally, the one day he got a different score, he realized it was because the day before he had watched the Olympics. And in that, they African Americans were portrayed as winners, as in a positive light. So he subconsciously associated them with positive things. So yeah, when they show you a couple of categories and then give you an image, it takes you a split second longer to place it in one of the categories. And that's how the IAT, implicit association test, extracts your subconscious beliefs, biases, prejudices, and preferences, and you can't fool it. No matter how many times you take it.
Do you think if you were just sat in a chair, just hauled in there by a couple of officers or agents or whatever, sat into a chair and then were told, take this test. You take this test or I'll smack you on the knuckles again. Whatever. You were coerced into taking the test. Could you beat it then or not?
No. That's the thing. Even though you know it's coming and you know what questions are going to be asked and you know what they're testing for, you can't hide your ingrained, indoctrinated, subconscious belief systems, your associations, they call it. You associate certain things with certain things. Like they give you two
if
categories.
It's in, so in other words, if it's in your head, it's in your head and it will be revealed.
Right, exactly.
Man.
You can't hide your subconscious. And that's how they will detect the crime before it happens. That's how they'll do it. If they do widespread mental health evaluations,
yep.
Gun licenses, it'll start at gun licenses, and then it'll move to driver's license and college entry exam, and on an employee application. If you're an employer, wouldn't you want to be able to do this to your employee? Because they already want your Facebook password to try and figure out who you really are.
Yeah, I got you. Hey, listen, this was a fantastic call, Jeff. Thank you very, very much for that. Good grief. He just blew out the part about making a run on the cash at the banks if we default, which I'm afraid we just might. All right, more open lines with you when we come back. John B. Wells in for George Norrie tonight. He'll be back on Monday. This is Coast to Coast AM.